From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 19th day of September, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel at agmarket.net, and Ben Brown will be here from University of Missouri Extension and the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute, otherwise known as FAPRI. He'll help us explore the export market for both in corn and soybeans in the coming year. That six-week lag that we had in those market numbers that didn't come out recently from USDA because of a glitch, and what it all might mean moving forward, all on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand at willag.org, willag.org. Oh, and there now, you'll find a link to get yourself registered for the Fall Farm Doc webinar series. We had one last Thursday. The next one comes up this week on Thursday at 11 a.m., and we'll be talking about the price of farmland. You won't want to miss that. You can just sign up for it and actually, from your phone, cast it right through to your combine or tractor cab while you're in the midst of harvest and hear all about the price of farmland. Really, you won't need to be able to look down and see those PowerPoint slides, so you can pay attention to what you're up to. That's 11 a.m. on Thursday of this week. Sign up right now, either at willag.org for the FarmDoc Fall Webinar Series or at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn today at $6.78 a bushel, up a penny. The March up a half cent at $6.83 and May futures $6.84 three quarters higher. November beans up 12 3/4. Settlement price there at $14.61. The January at $14.67 up 12 1/4. And March beans up 13 1/4 at $14.69 1/4. Bean meal futures at $438.20, up $8.60. And the bean oil 66 cents lower at $68 even. Wheat futures soft red at $8.30 1/2, 29 1/4 cents lower. The hard red at $9.09 3/4, down 25 1/2 cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago at $150.90, 7 1/2 cents lower. Feeders at $182.30, up $1 and a nickel. And lean hogs at $88.15, 17 1/2 cents higher. Crude oil at $85.21 a barrel, up 45 cents. The diesel fuel or heating oil price at $3.25 1/10 a cent, up a penny and a tenth. And the wholesale price of gasoline today, about 3 8/10 cents, at $2.41 3/10 cents. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now at 30,862 is around 60 points higher, and the S&P 500 is down about 7 points for the afternoon. The U.S. dollar at 109.51 is up 0.004. Now here to take a look at these numbers with us and try to explain what's happening in Chicago and other places across the planet is AgMarket.net's Kurt Kimmel. Good afternoon to you, Kurt. Thanks for being with us today.
Well, good afternoon, Ty. Glad to be here. Thank you.
Well, let's start with what happened in Chicago as it relates to the agricultural commodities. What was most important to you?
Well, the anchor was wheat, it seemed like. Wheat just had no legs under it. Some unwinding spreads. The trade was buyers of wheat and sellers of other commodities here a few weeks ago after wheat harvest wrapped up. But as we move into fall, typically that spread flips the other way, but wheat just had no enthusiasm whatsoever. Technically, the technicians was watching this 830 level in the December futures. We closed at 830 1/2, but once we went below that, it seemed like every other order was a sell order, just no interest at all. When you look at the world situation there, Russia's still cheaper on that. Also, too, uncertainty on interest rates, looking at inflation, future demand. And so wheat just kind of was the culprit here today. And without wheat kind of being stronger, kind of spilled into the rest of the sector for the most part. But corn, beans was able to come in and have a little bit of a hook reverse to the upside. Saw some early overnight selling interest and some selling interest this morning. But we're able to hold these lows in through here and put together a decent close. And the strength, of course, was in the soybeans complex. And a couple of things there. China did step up and buy 136,000 tons of U.S. Beans. So that continues to be a plus here as they continue to add to their current position. And hopefully words between the two countries won't escalate here into the bitterness between Taiwan and China and keep these conversations positive. But also, too, on the bean side, there still remains a substantial premium to bring beans in, particularly in the next few days. At the basis kind of backs off in through here because there's still some near-term needs here to gather the physical inventory. Near-term, I know locally here, harvest is going to be kind of slow. Here in Bloomington Normal, we see anywhere from 3.5 to 4.5 inches. There are some reports of 5 inches on the east of us, but it kind of moved from the northwest to the east. You move to a little further out of that band you saw on the radar there, you know, quarter to half type inch rains around. So harvest activity will start to pick up. This afternoon's harvest progress is expected to be 10% complete as a nation on corn, and soybean harvest about 5% complete as a nation. And we continue to hear variable yield reports from this early activity thus far, Todd.
Yeah, I saw yield reports from east central Illinois that were lower than, of course, last year. That was expected. But from the northwestern part of the state of Illinois, the numbers looked really good. It'll be interesting to see as they come in across the Midwest and as corn particularly picks up in terms of harvest. There was harvest, I made note, in the Springfield area. I drove back from St. Louis on the weekend, and it looked like folks were starting to root around pretty good in that area. Have they been moving much in Bloomington Normal yet?
No, just still on the east of town here. There was a particular area there. They took a little corn out. It was some earlier corn. It was still wet. It was 30-some percent, but there was such a fairly good early bid there, premium, that kind of paid to, well, at least the farmer thought it would pay to and take that out. It was good black. Background, it had a dose of hail on it and a big dose of wind on it, so he was eager to kind of get it out and get it out of the way. But it was like 208, 210 versus 230, 235, so it was down some on that. These yields just continue to be variable. Listened to one gal out in Iowa there talking about the yield on one side of the hill. It's 100 bushel acre. On the other side of the hill, it's 200 bushel acre. So it's going to take a while to get a good average on this crop, Todd. But the bottom, we're seeing the moisture come down. A lot of the guys are saying, you know, we're getting close to this 22 to 25% moisture on some of this earlier stuff.
We've been talking on this program for a while, and it started in really August with Gary Schnitke discussing input prices for next year, particularly the price of nitrogen, which has been really quite high. I'm wondering if producers have been talking and asking you questions about that and how they might be able to manage that kind of risk and what kind of information you have for them.
Yeah, it a lot of it was about $1,100 a ton here for this fall, so what I've been picking up, some higher, some lower. There's all kinds of different situations you had to pay for now or you had, you know, subject availability and so forth. But for the most part, if you're sinking in a good chunk on that, one thing to do is go ahead and maybe start the marketing and maybe put some floors in to kind of hedge that bet a little bit. Yeah, because basically we're starting to look into next year, and Informa came out, and they're putting next year's corn acres at 91.5 versus 88.6 this year. So, you know, if we go ahead and get the extra acres, if weather's a little bit more favorable across the entire Midwest, we're subject to some downside price risk on that. So if you lock in one side, you might want to consider locking in or getting started on the other side to kind of manage some of this price risk, Todd.
Yeah, I made note the December corn today settled at, what, 622. That would be on the upside, probably outside of the normal range. I suppose I might think of that as 380 to 580, many would say 350 to 450, I think. But still, it's a very good price and probably producers need to consider what that means going forward and how they pay for high-priced nitrogen and other input costs from the livestock sector. Is there anything for the day?
Well, I think that the long-term bull continues to be in the beef side of the equation here. We're going to be looking at much tighter numbers here as we move into 2023. That's a ways out. But that continues to be headline news in through here. On the pork side of the equation, October is going to be pork month coming up. So continue to look forward to a good old butterfly pork chop here this fall, Todd.
Hey, thank you very much. I appreciate it, Kurt.
Very good. Take care.
That's Kurt Kimmel. He's with AgMarket.net. Joined us on the Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. You may always listen to him again on our website at willag.org. Just click and play from the website. And if you hit the podcast tab there at the top of the page, you'll find a way to subscribe to our podcast, including the Closing Market Report. Just hit the podcast tab and you'll find the Closing Market Report, Commodity Week, and the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast in each of those players. There is a subscribe button. There's also a way to listen, of course, to us on the webpage from places like Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Spotify, NPR One, and many, many more. Now, while you're on that homepage, willag.org, you'll make note that there's also a link to this Thursday's Fall Farm Doc webinar series. We'll be talking about the price of farmland then. You won't want to miss it. It's free. It's just an hour long at 11 o'clock. You can sign up through that link at willag.org. In today's agricultural news, farm profits have been turning to losses. Staggering farm input costs are driving ag profits into the ground. It's kind of a tale of two economies. One, the economy of scale, and two, the cost of farming, says South Dakota U.S. Senator John Thune.
This year will be the record year in terms of gross farm receipts. In other words, top line revenues in agriculture, highest ever. 14% increase over last year, and yet they're going to show an inflation-adjusted net farm income reduction of 1%.
And for good reason.
Look at the cost of fertilizer since 2020. It's gone up 84%. Cost of fuel and oil has gone up 35% since 2020. You look at these increases and what it costs to produce a crop this year, and you can see why all these, throughout the entire food chain, the impact inflation is having ultimately felt by the American consumer and the American family.
At the grocery store,
the price of food, groceries, has gone up 13.5% year over year, the highest rate of increase since 1979.
But Russia has further aggravated food inflation, destroying or damaging nearly 16% of Ukraine's crop storage facilities, based on a new independent report, and initially blockading Ukraine's Black Sea ports. The two nations are also major sources of fertilizer, and Russia is a major supplier of oil and gas. And one final agricultural news note as we prepare to wrap up 2022. Many are looking ahead to the new year, and one popular resource in the farming community is the Farmer's Almanac. Just ask Kurt Kimmel at AgMarket.net. Editor of the Farmer's Almanac, Pete Geiger, says people often limit the almanac to weather, but there's much more to the book.
Quite frankly, the almanac is very much about how to be good to yourself and how to do things for yourself. And, you know, there's always challenges, whether it's inflation or whether it's, you know, dry conditions or whatever it is. The Almanac has a wealth of information both in the book and online, which is farmersalmanac.com. So if you have both the book and the online, you're pretty set for the year.
While the Farmer's Almanac started in New Jersey in 1818, Geiger noted the publication has had only 7 editors, helping them to stay true to their roots. He says another reason they've been able to stand the test of time is the fact the almanac has not gotten political.
Last time we said something was political. It was in 1828 when we said that Congress spoke too much and spent too much. And we've never made a comment. In the 1860s, nothing about a civil war, nor World War I or II. Even as my father was fighting World War II, nothing was ever mentioned about the wars or anything. And so I think we've been very much stuck very much to what our purpose is, which is really to help people do things for themselves.
The 2023 Farmer's Almanac is available now wherever you buy books or magazines. And again, there is the online component as well as social media. And that's a look at today's Ag News. Ben Brown now joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's online at willag.org. Hi, Ben. Thank you for being with us. You're a University of Missouri Extension agricultural economist. We talk to you once a month, and you've been this week taking a look at the export market and some of the numbers for the primary crops. Can you tell me what you've discovered?
Yeah, absolutely. So we saw USDA WAC exports in the latest September World Ag and Supply Demand estimates, largely due to smaller supplies here in the United States. And I don't think that really necessarily came shocked anybody after they absorbed the yield and production declines. But certainly, you know, we're in an environment where higher prices plus a strong dollar that's bordering on two-decade-year highs here relative to other currencies. And specifically, the headline has been the U.S. dollar compared to the European euro. While Europe's an important market, I encourage people to look at the U.S. dollar to like the Japanese yen or the Mexican peso, Chinese yuan. Those are currencies that I think really come into play here. But certainly, in an environment with higher prices, higher currencies, start to think about export demand into those markets and potential for the year ahead, even with a smaller crop. So we've been looking at that, or I've been looking at that, as well as really starting to dive into some of the USDA trade data that was delayed for a couple of weeks on kind of a technical glitch. So I think, you know, I can summarize everything for all crops saying that we're starting the year off, and we can get into the technicals if you want and go through some of this crop by crop. But I think I can summarize all crops in general by saying exports are going to be important for this marketing year to maintain the high prices that we've seen without, you know, causing any demand destruction. But certainly we've started the year out on what I'm going to call a below average to not totally catastrophic pace, right? So like it's a pace that's not overly exciting, but it's something that, at least at the current point, not to get overly concerned about, given that we're 2 weeks into the marketing year.
We probably should take at least a closer look at soybeans, because about, what, 60% of those are exported out of the country, so might be worthwhile discussing that for sure. How do the numbers put together?
Yeah, so let's start with just the export inspections here real quick. So U.S. soybean export inspections last week were just under 20 million bushels, 19.1 million bushels. That was up from the previous week of 12.5 million bushels and up from a four-week rolling average of just about 19 million bushels. So we're kind of at that plateau of 19 million bushels a week is kind of where we're at here for the time being. You know, when we look at largest destinations for the most recent week of export inspection data, almost 30% of what we shipped went to China, 27% went to Mexico, 19% to Japan, 12% to Indonesia, and 10% to South Korea. So if I had one thing that I would say about the soybean market, is that it does seem like we are able and are picking up some diverse markets here in this early period, to where, you know, China, instead of being 50% of our export sales, like what we see oftentimes during the marketing year, we're seeing some of these other countries like Indonesia and South Korea come in and really buy some U.S. soybeans. Let's flip the script here and think about outstanding sales for the marketing year when we, you know, or I shouldn't say outstanding sales, but total commitments for the marketing year going forward. When I look at those, you know, again, we're seeing the huge export sales numbers that we're used to seeing kind of at this point in time due to, you know, our harvest, right? That's usually when we see very strong export sales coming into the picture. We're not seeing that. I think there's two reasons for that. One, demand for soybeans up until the last couple of weeks was relatively soft. If you looked at the Chinese market and their crush margins for meat, largely very soft across the board there. They have recovered, so I do think we could see some additional sales in the coming week. But then the other part of this coin is we had Argentina put forth a program that basically encouraged producers to sell soybeans into the market, and that largely you know, provided, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 200 million bushels that were available for export kind of all at once, which was kind of a rather unique thing. That pushed some potential Chinese buyers away from the United States into that Argentine market for the time being. Now, we don't expect that to be a permanent thing, but that was just kind of a, you know, here as we start the marketing year, that was something that pulled that market share away from us in the short run. So, that's part of the coin there. And certainly, you know, while we saw very strong new marketing sales, or, you know, marketing sales for the next marketing year heading into this marketing season. So that's really confusing. Basically, let me back up and say, try to explain that. So in August, when we were still in the 2021-22 marketing year, these were sales that were made for the 22-23 marketing year that we're currently in. And so as we head into the final weeks of that old crop marketing year, we were seeing strong, you know, strong levels of you know, the next marketing year sales. The question was, we didn't carry some of that momentum into the new marketing year with sales. And so can we, you know, while we started off on a good note, can we maintain that? And that's where I'm talking about, like, you know, we need to see feeding margins within China improve to continue to see shipments there. We need to see competition, some of these factors like the U.S. dollar relative to other currencies become more competitive for us to continue to ship into that market.
On the corn side, about 15% of the crop, USDA in its last WASDE for the new crop, expects to be exported. What did you find in those numbers?
Yeah, good question. So U.S. corn export inspections last week were reported about 21.6 million bushels. That was up from 18.7 million the week before, but down from a four-week rolling average of 25 million bushels. And that's probably the story there. I think that was part of the underlying message I had in my opening comments of, like, you know, these are decent numbers, but they're nothing totally exciting, right? That did fall within trade expectations. When we look at the largest destinations on the week, Mexico made up 40%, Japan roughly 30%, and China 26% of those exports that we saw last week. If I flip over, you know, to the sales data, and keep in mind it was delayed, so we're kind of diving in and looking at multiple weeks all at the same time. You know, if I look at that accumulated export shipments data that we have, you know, we're sitting somewhere right around 21 million bushels, which is 26 million bushels below our seasonal pace that we need to see this year. So we've got a long ways to go in this export season. We certainly can make that up, but I think that just speaks to the tone of, it's not, these export numbers aren't overly exciting, and we're going to have to see, you know, some increased demand for our product to continue to make some of these targets that USDA has put out in their WASDE. And that's the lower targets after, you know, their September report when they slashed production and then also some of the demand categories.
Indeed, USDA in the September World Agricultural and Supply Demand Estimates dropped export figures for the marketing year down 100 million bushels for corn. Hey, thank you for taking the time with us today, Ben.
Thank you.
That's Ben Brown. He's an agricultural economist at University of Missouri Extension and FAPRI, the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.